This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome everybody to the Saxo Market Call. It is Wednesday, 7th of April, 2021. Markets taking a bit of a breather, at least in the U.S. Equity space. We saw that recent strong gain. You can see on slide two, where I'm noting that the pace of recent gains quite steep relative to some of those prior rallies to new highs. Interesting to see that kind of forceful momentum. But yesterday, a bit of a pause. And if we look around at some of the breadth measures, they're not super great. If you look at something like the Russell 2000, it's still quite below the all-time prior peak, etc. So it's not a fully positive story across the board. And Peter, you mentioned the DAX yesterday as getting maybe a bit too much too fast after its 10% rally. And it did gap tremendously higher, but pretty much sold off all day and end of the day on the lows of the cash session, even though it did post a decent gain on the day. I guess the tune remains a little bit the same. It was just maybe a little bit too much too fast. Is that your take on things?
Yeah, that's probably my take currently, although we cannot ignore the momentum. I'm sitting here looking at the NASDAQ 100 futures and having this feeling that, okay, maybe we're going to touch 14,000 again pretty quickly. It still seems like a strong market, but I would say there are still cracks out there. We had the IMF lifting their growth outlook for global growth yesterday. But then, as I've put in on slide three, you're seeing these headlines with India now reporting a new all-time high cases of COVID-19, simply because people are losing up. They're getting they hit by the COVID-19 fatigue like all of us, and probably there's also new variants, mutations that have happened in India. And as you can see, India was down almost 1% in our theme basket yesterday, and it's the only theme that is down for the month. Put in a chart of our theme basket there on slide three. So I think that's a situation that is developing pretty rapidly. Also, I think the you can correct me if I'm wrong, John, but I think the central bank just launched a pretty aggressive QE program to offset some of the financial constraints that they are seeing. And just before we pass it on, I also want to highlight when we talk about COVID-19 and vaccination, that it's, I think there's different cases now that are interesting. We've been talking about UK and Israel being two positive cases, but then you have a situation in Chile, which have predominantly been using the Chinese Sinovac, and they have vaccinated a lot of people in Chile, but their case numbers continue to rise, and there's very much worry now that that maybe the Sinovac from China is not really very good against the P1 variant from Brazil, and we're still lacking the trial data from phase 3 on Sinovac against these new mutations. So it leaves some questions marks, I would say.
Yeah, you're right. The Indian Central Bank, pretty modest QE program, but it caught the market a bit off guard. So you have the dollar versus the rupee up about 1%, and in a market where the dollar is actually relatively weak. And we've commented about that yesterday. And just on slide four, if you have a look at the 10-year benchmark yield in the U.S., this remarkable rally extending quite aggressively yesterday. And this despite all those positive U.S. numbers that we reeled off, and especially things like the record ISM services improvement at 63 plus for March. Just this bid under Treasury is quite interesting, and I think a key driver, certainly in the FX space, where we're seeing the dollar on its back foot, and especially for the Japanese yen, which I kind of failed to mention more prominently yesterday. So if you look at dollar yen, you're seeing that it's consolidating quite aggressively, one of the more aggressive consolidators in the FX space against the dollar, and getting to some interesting levels as we work down towards the prior pivot high around 109.35. And then if you look at that back at the US 10-year benchmark, I mean, if the bonds aren't going to sell off at the long end of the curve, this kind of data, what are they going to do? They may rally further, especially given how positioned the market is for this. Even if we're seeing further out the potential for higher yields, just a basic consolidation back to 1.5%. Is a basic sort of consolidation scenario. It could drive dollar yen towards 108, even slightly below. And the other yen crosses could be interesting there as well. So really be focusing a lot on Japanese yen. And just to round out the effects before I get to Ola with some thoughts on commodities, if we jump to slide eight, our trend overview and euro sterling on that page. So on the trend overview, you can see how the lowest yielders, everything from the negative yielding euro and Swiss, and not quite negative, but still at zero, the Swedish krona, you're seeing the momentum shifts are the most powerful there. I'm a bit scratching my head why the yen is lagging so badly. I think some of the switch in the focus and more positive focus in Europe recently, despite the vaccination difficulties, is one of the reasons for that. But if you look at euro sterling, yesterday the European Commission announcing that more vaccines would be available earlier than expected, most adults being inoculated, or at least the doses available by mid-June. This was far forward of prior expectations, although big caveat, that includes something like 70 million AstraZeneca shots. But the notable thing being, if you look at euro sterling chart there, and sterling, and broadly speaking, just quite an ugly move there in sterling. I think part of that, an unwinding of that sort of vaccination premium that I think was building into sterling recently. Yeah, Ole.
Yeah, just before we move on, John, I just want to just highlight on yen, because we saw that in the weekly speculative data from the cut report, that speculators in the futures market basically been a very aggressive sellers, not surprisingly, for the past 6 weeks, to the extent that the yen short, or the yen position, went from a long to the biggest short in nearly 2 years. So so clearly some of these lower levels that, as we, if we should move down towards that, yeah, 108.50, 109 area, if you start to challenge that, then a significant amount of recently established shorts would start to get squeezed, which they're not squeezed already. So I think that's just worth keeping in mind as well.
Yeah, it's a key point. There was 50,000 contracts on the yen long side in just a matter of, call it 8-10 weeks ago, and that's gone to well over 50,000, closer to 60,000, the most recent one short.
Exactly.
Historically, of course, the aggregate positions have been far larger, but it's the scale of the speed of the recent turnaround, as you point out, that's quite impressive. So yeah, basically a consolidating a treasury scenario. Could weigh on the dollar, but could really support the yen, and broadly so, especially if we get a risk sentiment wobbling on to boot. But in your space, Ola, where is your focus in commodities these days? Oil sort of unable to get something going. Where are you looking?
Well, I think the it's probably some of the smaller markets that is attracting some attention right now. Just on oil, the Brent crude really firmly stuck in the $60 to $65 range right now. The we talked about the vaccine rollout. It's having a positive impact on demand. We're seeing that slowly starting to emerge. But at the same time, there's still pockets of the virus outbreak that's keeping the momentum from accelerating. So a range bound market there for now. If we move to the another smaller market, the coffee market, if you look at slide 9, it's been in a downtrend since March. Was basically a tough month. It dropped 10%, but we saw quite a significant turnaround yesterday, up nearly 4%. It is reports from Brazil that the weather condition that we have been talking about for a while is now starting to translate into downgrades in terms of the coffee production for this current year. They expect to be down, or potentially could be down by 1/3. It is the low season coffee production is. They have a high year and a low year. This is a low year production, but still, if it's happening at a time where we're seeing mobility starting to be on the increase, so we're heading back to restaurants, heading back to bars, and that will automatically increase demand for coffee. So it's one we should keep an eye on. But I just highlight as well the what we need in we need to see the market tightening further. Basically, by that I mean that we need to see the contango, which is currently reflection of an oversupplied market that needs to come down. Right now, the contango for a 1 year period is 7%. It has been much higher last year. 2019 was more than 15%, i.e. you are making more than 1% on a monthly basis by being short. So that's we need to see the market tighten further in order to really to attract some investment demand. And then just on the metal space, gold is stale. We are in a range. As we talked about yesterday, the double bottom below 1680 provided some optimism, but the market is still firmly focusing on the dollar and obviously the yields, which helped the market yesterday to punch higher, but it still really needs to break above that 1765 level. So while It's range bound. Another metal is just continued to move higher. That's platinum, and you can see that here on slide 10. Platinum's discount to gold has now dropped back below $500. That's the first time since early 2019 we're seeing that scenario or development. It's developing, and you can see on the insert as well that discount has more than halved now since November. So just basically since November, they're almost gone in opposite direction. And it is the belief in the green transformation that is increasing investment or industrial demand, but also investment demand has remained relatively firm. So for now, while gold is trying to make its mind up, platinum is just quietly making some headway here.
Yeah, and if you're wondering why the South African rand is towards the highs versus the dollar of the cycle, it is that platinum chart and those platinum develops you mentioned that are such a key driver as South African platinum production is so important.
I got a corner as well. We'll come back to that, John.
All right. Peter, I think both of us, unprompted, created a slide on Bitcoin. We tend to develop our slides in secrecy and separate from one another, but I think it was a bit of irony there that on the same day we came up with something. I just pulled out a couple of thought bubbles on Bitcoin on slide 6. If you look at the quote from this article, I've got there from a Forbes article, I guess it is, that a single Bitcoin transaction uses 708 kilowatt hours of electric energy. So the power consumed by an average US household for nearly a month. Small problem there, obviously for scalability and the fact that it's not really a transaction story. It is a store of value story that people are chasing, a greater fool, hoping that the next person will be a greater fool than you, essentially, if that is the case. And then I just had one of these coffee spraying moments when I was looking at the Coindesk.com headlines and saw that this other quote you see there, that crypto won't be money until the IRS accepts it for taxes. And I just, of course, that's just laughable. But it's, coming from a very credible former FX strategist and profile named Mark Chandler. But the idea that IRS will ever, of course, the scalability of that transaction to begin with is impossible, given the above fact. Of course, there are talks of technologies to reduce the energy load of doing these transactions. And you and I have talked about, Peter, and that there is a sort of a critical mass we're getting to in this space where the regulators and the powers that be, if you will, either need to do something and swat this whole space back down, or it's going to become too big, for that to happen. So I'll let you take it away, Peter, there. But I still think that is the overriding risk, that there's a big slap down from the sovereign at some point, from regulation in this space. But what are you focusing on, Peter? Oh, yes. This is a great story on Coinbase. Such a key aspect to this as well.
Yeah. So I actually think that we are, in some respects, actually getting very close to the Rubicon. Rubicon being this famous river in the northern part of Italy, in the Roman Empire. When you cross the Rubicon, then it really meant...
It's Gaul, actually. So the France.
Sorry.
Isn't it? Or wait. Maybe I'm going to do a fact check on that while you talk.
Great. Sorry. But the point being, when you cross the Rubicon, there is no way back. You will attack Rome and it will mean civil war, right? And I think we're getting very close to that inflection point in crypto. As you mentioned, the space is becoming dominant. I think we crossed 2 trillion in combined market value across all coins the other day. And now you have Coinbase, arguably the biggest trading exchange for these cryptocurrencies, filing for its IPO. It's pending. They have already issued their S1 filing, and yesterday they announced their Q1 numbers. We will call them preliminary because they're not audited. So, but they estimate that they have generated 1.8 billion in revenue in Q1 of this year. And just for perspective, if you take Euronext, you can see here on slide 7 on the insert, you can see Euronext financials here. So last year, Euronext did 884 million euros, so that's roughly equivalent to $1 billion dollars in revenue in a single year, and Coinbase did almost twice that in a single quarter. And you could just see around the internet, and this I've been banging on this for a lot of time now, that cryptocurrencies probably have the best well-oiled marketing machine I have ever seen. It's present everywhere on the internet. You get it smashed into your head to lure and pull people into this. But also you can see all the headlines on Coinbase, they're all positive. But maybe I'm just too cynical, but I will reverse the argument and say, I mean, if they make this much money compared to an established player like Euronext that, you know, offers a lot of financial instruments across the globe, across a lot of different asset classes, to me, it tells you that customers or trading clients within cryptocurrency are paying way too high spreads. They're basically paying a too high price to participate in a market, and which has actually been now becoming quite large. So to me, I think this is a worrying sign that this is not healthy, actually.
All right. And just a history check while you were talking there.
Thank you. Thank you.
So you were absolutely right, Peter. So you check one to you. The Rubicone River is in Italy, but Caesar was returning from Gaul. That's where I got tripped up. He was returning from Gaul to start the Civil Wars. Okay, let's come a few thousand years back forward. Key points there on the Coinbase space. Or sorry, on the crypto space in terms of transaction costs, but also just the nature of the beast with these distributed coins. Ole, let's get back to you. You had a thought on the corn market here as we sort of paused, very high level still, but we've been paused for what, 2 months now?
Exactly, John. And we were obviously out of the office last week when we had that major prospective planting report on March 31st, which basically shocked the market. And I put a small insert of the result there. It was basically the first guidance to how U.S. farmers would, what kind of acreage they would allocate to the different products or crops this year. And as you can see on the insert, both the corn and soybean acreage was quite a bit lower than what the market had anticipated. And that led to that spike we can see on the corn chart there as well on slide 11. Since then, the market has stabilized. And as you said, we've been going sideways now for the past 3 months. And this makes me a little bit nervous because we built in a lot of bullish news into the market now. We also built in quite a significant speculative long. You can see that on the left, on the right-hand side. This is the total spec long in grains and soybeans. And you can see the yellow area, which is the corn, is basically more around 58% of the total net long. So I'm just a little bit hesitant, despite, I would say, supportive fundamentals, to get too aggressive at this stage in looking for further increase, because it looks like we have cooked most of these good news into the price. So just be on a little bit on the lookout here in the short term, at least. As long as we stay above 525, it's okay. But if we start to take out that level, just keep in mind there's a massive long in the market right now.
Right. I guess the weather-wise, the spring weather in the Northern Hemisphere is going to be really critical next steps.
That would be very key. That would be one of the focus points over the coming weeks.
Yeah. All right. Now we have a acquisition bid for Toshiba Corporation, the Japanese company. Peter, what's going on there? I saw Bloomberg link talking about this is the biggest private equity deal attempted deal of this nature in quite some time.
Yeah, it's a sizable deal, $20 billion. It's not only a CVC here in Europe, which is one of the largest private equity firms in the world. They're teaming up with KKR in the US to take Toshiba private. So the chairman and the company Toshiba has announced that they will be looking thoroughly at the deal and considering it. So we'll see where this goes, but the share price, the premium offered is pretty steep. I think almost 20%, as you can see on the slide 12 here. The share price have gone close to the highs back from 2016, and it has been a pretty dreadful period. And as you can see in the financials, I mean, we talk about a company that has delivered negative revenue growth for at least the last five fiscal years, and very volatile operating margin and almost negative free cash flow in all those years. I mean, this is probably a prime example of a company that I as a shareholder or investor would never touch. I mean, I don't see this offering any interesting value if you're thinking long term. But maybe these private equity firms can see a way to do either some financial engineering, could be, do some very heavy cost cutting and streamline the operations. We know that a lot of Japanese companies, they do have great products, they just often are run with a huge overhang of cost because of the very complicated labor market they have in Japan and the general structure among companies, etc. So there is room for maybe some spring cleaning here, but you know, this is never a company I would touch unless I had some magic inside information about how you could harvest synergies by cost cutting or something else.
Also, there's also the issue often when you're talking about crossing borders and that border between this, you know, for example, the US and Japan, the culture clash there that can happen if you try to run into a Japanese company and shake everything upside down. I can imagine that could be a challenge as well. It would be an interesting story regardless. And a 30% premium is quite considerable. Which was what the talk was in that article I also came across this morning. Anything you wanted to discuss on the earnings front that you did discuss yesterday on our slide 13 overview?
No, slide 13 is just there for your overview. So that's a service. We'll dig into the earnings season, Q1 earnings season, when we get to Monday.
All right. A bit busier on the macro highlights for today, the calendar highlights. You can see that on slide 14. A whole bevy of Fed officials speaking, and the reason they're notable is it's a number of the actual voters that are out speaking, both Evans, Barkin, and even Daley, and all of them speaking on the economic outlook and the monetary policy. So, of course, any sort of common themes could emerge from that. And then the FOMC minutes, which are, you know, somewhat interesting at the margin, given the shift in the forecast we saw at the last Fed meeting. And what seems to be a treasury market that is buying into the Fed's forward projections on the economy, the idea that, yes, we may get an inflation a pickup here, but it's something that is not seen as sustained, likewise for GDP, et cetera. I guess the fear is that, you know, we have this latest stimulus round, but we're not going to get a stimulus round of that nature going forward. So once that sort of sugar high splashes through the economy, I guess the fear is that as long as there's no new fiscal package, even if we do get an infrastructure bill as well, that it looks like it's going to be offset, or they will attempt to offset it with tax rises, which have their own set of negative consequences for asset prices, et cetera. So just interesting to see if the market continues to buy that story and if there's any interesting discussion in the FOMC minutes. I somewhat doubt that, but watch for that. And then we have ECB meeting minutes tomorrow, and then that key global inflation gauge, the Chinese March PPI figure out late Thursday, early Friday in Asia. For today, it's a wrap. Thanks for joining.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.